This is the Own It Show, where we tell stories of how everyday people made ownership theirs to create extraordinary success.
Welcome back to another week of the Own It Show Coach Conversations. And I'm Justin.
I'm Elise, and welcome to the show.
So guys, I know a lot in the past we've chatted with a bunch of people and talked about their catalyst events that have brought them to that level of ownership. And there's a large spectrum, some things that just happen organically through living life, and all of a sudden you experience something that just turns a light bulb on, and others are a little bit more distinct, a little bit more publicized, a little bit more nationally recognized. And today we've got a guy that's going to come on and speak about an event that everybody knows about, something that was really prevalent in pretty much the only city in the U.S. that matters in many people's opinions. And the fact of how he's been able to change his life and bring it to a point of really that rerouted everything is really, really unique. And so let me bring you back to kind of this day on U.S. Airways flight 1549 that ended up landing in the Hudson. And the guy we're bringing on today wasn't just a passenger, but he was really one of the people on this plane that helped everybody get back to their families that night. And I think that is what's truly, truly amazing. And this doesn't define him, but it's helped redefine what life means to him and how he truly lives in ownership every day. So Dave Sanderson, thank you so much for spending time with us today. And welcome to the Own It Show.
Thank you, Justin and Elise. I'm honored to be here with you today. Thank you.
So Dave, first off, I want to talk to you about what you've just went through before we get back to that story. And it was really like a homecoming moment for you this past weekend, where you swam across the Hudson with the Navy SEALs. And can you tell us a little bit about what that was like for you and the purpose and intention behind that?
Well, thank you. Yes, it was quite an amazing event. And really, a lot of the amazing events started back in April when I agreed to do it. When I was invited to do it, I just was really going to do it just to raise money for homeless vets. That was sort of the driving force. But as I started training and I was with the SEALs and having a coach who coaches Olympians really break me down and help me raise my standard, it became a whole different mission. Because as I went through the training and they started from scratch, I learned really this thing was not only about raising money and supporting those vets. It was about going back and what my new book's called Turmoil to Triumph, being able to leave on your own terms. And that's really what it became about, because as I was training and breaking myself down every morning at 5 a.m. with these tremendous patriots that I was with, I started realizing that going back into the Hudson River was going to allow me to do a couple of things. Number one, like I said, leave on my terms. Because the last time I was in the Hudson River, it wasn't on my terms. I was put there in a place where I didn't have a vote, I didn't have control, and I had to deal with it. But first, and now I have a chance to go back and do that. But second, I want to really show people how, I talk about how to turn turmoil into triumph. And I've done it, and I have great stories to tell. But this one really epitomizes how you have to go face whatever turmoil you've had in your life. And it could be a big one, it could be a small one, but this was a big one. And you have to face it head on and own it. And being able to not only own it, but make that commitment to accomplish it and complete it. And there's so many lessons that came out of this that I'm really excited to be able to share. That candidly, it's when I started walking up those steps in New York City after swimming to the Statue of Liberty and then Ellis Island and then to the New York City, it wasn't relief, it was more a pride. Because I did it. I put the time in, I made the commitment, and more than a commitment, Justin and Elise, it was a resolve. Because one of the things I will be talking about is, and we talk about owning it. My dad taught me that my word was my bond. So when I made this bond back in April, I had to own it. It was done. The question was, how could I get it done? I needed a lot of coaching. And you got to one of the things my mentor Bill always taught me, and this goes back to 1984, is you have to have the humility prepared to have the confidence to execute. You have to humble yourself. And that was another part of this big lesson that I had to humble myself. I thought I knew how to swim. I thought I knew I could do this, but you know, to be able to accomplish something major in your life, you got to humble yourself with people who've done it and walk the talk. So that's a long-winded answer to a short question.
It sounds like an extremely powerful moment for you to be able to go back. And as you said, the idea of control, the last time you were in the Hudson River, it was completely out of your control. And now you're doing it not only on your terms, but because it was the conscious decision you made to do it and a promise that you made to yourself. Like you said, you're only as good as your word to go back and do it. And so the pride that you felt in that moment must have been, you know, one of those once in a lifetime experiences.
Yeah, it's a defining moment. There was a picture that was taken of me shaking hands with my coach. And that was sort of like the moment, right? Like, because one of the things you learn when you do something like this, and you probably know this with the work you've done, it's just not about you. It takes a team. And it wasn't just my personal team, but it was my extended team. It was also, more importantly, my swim buddy and wingman, Suzanne. She was with me the entire time. And that's another part of the lesson. Is if you're going to really accomplish something big, you got to have a wingman. You got to have someone there to not only encourage you, but also push you and also console you when you need a little bit of, you know, really empathy. So there's so many lessons, but yes, Elise, it was that moment was an amazing moment when I got out and Suzanne got out, we hugged. It's like, okay, you know what? I left on my terms. And what else can I do in my life now? Show people how when life's getting them now, especially this last year. Because what I tell people, last year wasn't just about COVID. It was also about these justice, social justice questions. It was about the election. It was about police. It all kept stacking on people. And all of a sudden, people didn't know which way to turn, and they were locked down. So it was, I'm going to show people there are ways to be able to accomplish turning whatever turmoil you have into a triumph.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I'd love if we could go back a little bit in time, and if you could tell us about the story, January 15th, 2009, what it was that happened. I'm sure many of our listeners are already familiar, but for those people who are not, can you tell us about what that day was like for you?
Yes, it was a normal business day. It was the end of a 3-day business trip ending up in Brooklyn, New York. And that's how I got to be in the New York City area. And we were working in a distribution center. And I don't know if anybody here has ever been or worked in a distribution center, but they open up early in the morning because trucks start early in the morning. And we wanted to be there when all the action was happening. So we start our day at 5 a.m., which is pretty early for people like me who usually start at 8 or 9 o'clock in the morning. But we got done at 10 o'clock, and that's what happened. At 10 o'clock, I called a travel agent. She put me on that flight. I wasn't supposed to be on the flight. I had a first-class seat at 5 o'clock. But I wanted to get home early because I've been traveling 3 days. I had four kids at that point in time, right? And it's like, you know, I was always traveling. My wife was at home handling all the other business. So I wanted to get home, and that's how I got on the flight. So I think one of the big things about it is I think I was destined to be on that flight. There's no reason I should have been on that flight. But there's nothing unusual about the day. It was 11 degrees and snowing, and you're up in Canada, right? I mean, it's cold in winter. I mean, it's no big deal. And the flights were delayed. That's no big deal because you're in LaGuardia, right? I mean, so happens all the time. But, about 60 seconds after we took off is when I heard an explosion. And that's when it's, I thought something was going on. But at that point, I flew so often, planes lose engines. And I knew that planes always have multiple engines. So, we have another engine, we'll go back to the airport. But part of the story that doesn't get talked about a lot is those birds hit simultaneously. As Canadian, he said the same exact millisecond. Because I truly believe, and I tell people this, you heard bang, bang, and you're in New York City on a plane, your thought process probably is going a different direction. But we heard bang, and 90% of the people on the plane were business people. And so it's like, okay, we'll just go back and get on the plane. But until we started crossing over the George Washington Bridge, and when the captain said his famous words, "This is your captain, brace for impact," that's when it got real, I think, for just about everybody on the plane. Because now you're only clearing the George Washington Bridge by roughly about 400 feet. The plane was 1,000 feet at that point in time, descending. The bridge is 600 feet up. So you're about 4,400 feet above, and you're looking up, and people are looking down, and you can see things. And it's like, wow, we're close. And that's the moment in time. You have roughly 60 seconds when you could potentially be dead, and you know it, and you're seeing it. It's right there. It's right in front of you. It's not like what just happened in, like in Haiti or something like that, where the earthquake hits, and unfortunately, things happen very quickly. It's strong. Yeah, you can see it. It's coming your way, and you could be going someplace different, and you have no control except for your mind. And I tell people that's the thing about it. That's when you have to manage things and you're an entrepreneur, you have to, you know, take ownership. We talk about like that. It all comes down to your mindset. If you can't control your mind in times of turmoil or things like that, or things of turbulence, that's when things can go sideways pretty quick.
We often say your mind has to be stronger than your emotions.
When
we continue to talk with this, as you see this, you're like 60 seconds before you're going in, what is the atmosphere on the plane of everybody else? And what is your experience?
Yeah, that's what's really amazing, because you could hear some people making phone calls. You could hear some people texting. And it's eerily quiet. You talk to any pastor and they'll tell you it's eerily quiet. Because at that point, I think everybody was going internal, right? They were like, okay. Me, personally, I was like locking down. I was like, okay, you know, A, I have to have a game plan. But B, what happened for me is I saw the movie of my life pass before my eyes. I saw things with clarity from when I was a child, when I first dated my wife, our kids were born. It's amazing. It's like 4K HD, and you see the movie of your life passing before your eyes. And that's what was really intense for me, because that's the moment I really realized what my life was all about. And you can see things. And that's why I remember so much, because it was so vivid. And the defining moments, those things really just lock in. And so that's what happened to me in that 60 seconds. I saw the movie. And about, you know, a few seconds before we impact, because I was watching out the window a little bit. It's like, okay, it's coming, right? I can see it coming. And right before impact, that's like I put my head down, say the final prayer. And, you know, then we hit. And as we know now, fortunately, hit perfectly. Because if he didn't, and I tell people, and, you know, just think 1 degree either way, he's toppling into New York City or toppling into Newark, which is a bigger disaster, right? Because it's rush hour. Yeah. Or he has 1 degree, his nose goes down just a little bit, and he's going to the bottom of the Hudson River. You have no shot. So he hit it perfectly. But now you got part two of the problem. This is where the passenger makeup of the plane became so important, the mindset of the passengers, because yeah, you got down now. Yay, we're down. But water's in the plane immediately. You know, and now, you know, where I was, it was about knee to ankle deep water. And the back was about chest to waist level deep water immediately. Because somebody who actually paid attention, they read the brochure, right? I didn't. Go to the closest exit, which may be behind you. Someone tried to open up that back door. And I don't blame that person, whoever it was. I don't blame them, because they did exactly what they read to do. Right. But as we found out in a plane and water, you don't open up the back door. It goes immediately down. And that's what happened. Water was so deep in the back of the plane. And it wasn't the term I used that night. I was on with Katie Couric on CBS. I said it was controlled chaos. No one was losing their heads. But now you're in fast motion. Right. Things are moving very quickly now because water's coming in. People are trying to get out. You know, and some people thought there's only a couple exits out. But the big lesson of that inside the plane was resourcefulness. Because all of a sudden you saw people jumping on top of seats, walking down seats. And all of a sudden, instead of having one path out, you have multiple paths out. And that's a great metaphor for life. Because when you think you only have one way to get something done, if you open your eyes and you're resourceful, all of a sudden things start opening up. And that's what happened. But my game plan was aisle up out. I just kept saying aisle up out, aisle up out. But when I got to the aisle, that's when the whole day changed. In fact, I think my entire life changed at that second, that millisecond, because that's the moment I heard my mom start talking to me. And my mom passed away in 1997. But when I was a child, she would tell me and my sister and probably my brother the same thing. If you do the right thing, God will take care of you. And I heard that in my head. And I grew up in a small town outside of Cincinnati, Ohio, and outside of Washington, D.C. So I grew up in small towns where everybody took care of everybody. So I climbed over the seats of the back of the plane to see if I needed help, and people were moving. So I just got behind everybody to walk out with everybody else. And that's why I know water is about chest level deep, because it was chest level deep. And if you saw how the plane hit, it hit the backside at first. So the bins are broken open, right? And all the luggage is floating out, right? And it's dark because it's underwater. Because if you look at the plane from the front, you can't see that. Look from the side, it's like this. It's underwater. So now it's dark. So that's like, you know, we just started making our way out. And, you know, I don't know if you have a question, I'll be more, but yeah, that's how it all started breaking down inside the plane.
This is January 15th. So this water is not warm.
36 degrees.
And so with the big, everybody's doing the cold plunges now and jumping in the cold water. And so you know what this types of water feels like. It's debilitating. It you can't move.
Yeah.
I've got two questions. One, what was that like? How were you able to move through that? What was that truly feeling like for everybody? And how, from a mindset side, were you able to continue to keep moving and keep operating? And two, what was it like at impact? Because I know it's everyone thinks, oh, you come down, and we know what a rough landing on wheels feels like. What did that landing feel like?
I answer number two first, because it was a very hard hit. It was a jarring hit. Because if you hit at approximately between 100 and 120 miles an hour, you hit backside first, and cold water is actually a pretty hard surface.
Oh, yeah.
So it was jarring. I went up, back, like twice very quickly. It was that jarring. And that's when I looked up, and I looked out the window, and I saw light. So, but yeah, it was a hard, hard hit. And he says the same thing. It was, you know, some people say it was jarring. I say it was hard. He had another word for it. I'll let him talk about the word he uses. But how, you know, when it came to the water side, what I tell people, what I found out later, and what I think is exactly what happened, it was adrenaline, right? You just got adrenaline going, because now you have a different mission. Because if you saw the movie, I don't know if you saw the movie or not.
Yeah.
One of the captains of one of the ferries said the mission in the movie, which unless you were listening quickly, you didn't really pick it up. It was no one dies today.
Yep.
He said that. That was the mission. Excuse me. So everybody was like moving, right? Very quickly. So adrenaline's going, right? And so when I got to the door, excuse me, I looked out, it was my time to go, but the boats and the wings was already filled up. I was no room for me to go out. That's why I was inside the plane, waist deep in 36 degree water for 7 minutes, you know, because I couldn't get out. Until about 7 minutes later, I felt the plane shift and water started going up my back. And what happened was, I found out later, one of the tugboats, part of the rescue, as he was backing out, hit the front of the plane and shook the plane. And that's what happened. And like, first thing I thought was Titanic. I'm like, this thing's going down, man. I got to get out. Time to go, right? So that's why I jumped in and started swimming to the closest boat that I could find. And I tell people, it was the longest 15-yard swim of my life. Because I had to swim to the end of the wing to get to the ferry in 36 degree water. And now I'm submerged, right? And so I still don't feel the water. You still don't feel the cold, right? Because you still got to go. And I didn't feel it until I got on the ferry. They pulled me up because I couldn't climb, threw me over the side. Now I'm standing up in the ferry. I'm like, I made it. But that's the moment. And they'll tell you, firemen will tell you this, police will tell you this, military will tell you this, because I speak to a lot of them. Is, you know, you can go all day long on adrenaline. I mean, these fire guys are going into the fires, right? They got it going, but all of a sudden you see them on the curb, they have nothing left because it's all gone. That's what happened to me. But now the adrenaline's gone. It's 11 degrees outside, and you've been in water for over 7 minutes. That's when I said, I could barely breathe. It was just my life, I feel everything was sucking out because I couldn't breathe. But fortunately, there was a guy there with a phone, and that's how my family found out, because I got to leave a message that I'd been in a plane crash. And that's how they knew I'd been in a plane crash, but that's all I could get out.
What a life-changing moment for you. And I think one of the things when Justin and I were talking about having you on, and again, we're familiar with the story, the movie, all of those types of things, but One of the things that we would really love to understand from you today is, how did life change for you?
Yep.
And I'm not necessarily talking about, you know, changing career or whatever it may be, but the way that you started to approach life and see life and ultimately own your life, how did that change for you?
Yeah, it changed in a couple of different moments. And there are like two major shifts. First, it was when I actually got back to Charlotte. My company didn't check in with my wife or me. So I didn't know they even knew I was in a plane crash. So I went by the office with a couple of my daughters, and my wife did not want me to drive alone, which was a very smart move. I shouldn't have been driving at all, but that's another story for another day. And I went by the office, and my manager at that point said, "You're going to Michigan next week, right?" And he didn't even acknowledge that I've been in a plane crash. Now, fortunately, the vice president did, but that also told me I was just a number. So I said, something's not right, right? Something's not right adding up. Because one of the things, me having the opportunity to be a head of security for Tony Robbins for 14 years, Tony would always ask, "When are you going to do something for yourself? Time to get out. Time to do it for yourself." And he would sit on me about this. And I always gave him excuses until there's no more excuses, right? Now I really got an excuse, like, I'm just a number. That was number one. But number two actually happened about 2 weeks later. Number two actually happened the following weekend. And then number three happened 2 weeks later. So number two, what happened was I spoke in my church that next Sunday, and all of a sudden 500 people show up to this thing, and I don't even know what I'm going to say. And I say, "God, give me something to say. Please, just give me something to say." He did. And all of a sudden at the end, I was talking to two gentlemen. One was from Bank of America, one was from Wachovia, and that's no big deal. But there's this elderly lady in the back of the room staring at me, just locking me down. And then all of a sudden she caught my eye and came up on my left and grabbed my arm. I'm like, "Whoa." She starts grabbing me, right? I'm like, "What?" And it's like, "What's going on?" Because now we're only a week out from a plane crash. I'm like a little goofy anyway, right? But she looked me in the eye and said, "I was questioning if there's a God, and I don't believe in miracles. But your physical evidence, there is a God, and he does miracles. Thank you. Thank you." And she looked at me in the eye and just walked away. And that's the moment I realized the bigger purpose of my life was. I could impact somebody's life right now, what happened to me. So that's when it really started shifting. That was the moment it started shifting for me, but it really started kicking in 2 weeks later, because 2 weeks later, I was on Good Morning America with other passengers. We were in the green room, and all of a sudden, one of the passengers just goes off. This goes on, let me start yelling. And I'm like looking at him like, "What's wrong with this guy?" Right? I mean, you know, we survived a plane crash. We're on national TV, right? I mean, how bad is it? But I found out shortly after that he was going through a divorce and he lost his job. And I started realizing how many times in my life have I judged somebody so quickly before I could find out their backstory and understand what their life's all about. That was the moment. I said, if I become less judgmental and just that, focus on relationships and understanding people, how could that impact my life? And all of a sudden, I started really focusing in on how can I serve people instead of being served. And that shifted, because all of a sudden I'm speaking at the Supreme Court. I'm doing things. I'm meeting people from all over the world that I would never met you. So that those three moments really started shifting my direction. And that's why now my new book is really about the lessons my mentor started teaching me in 1984 that he learned from his mentor in 1929. And that impacted everything that I did, but I never realized it until that moment, that defining moment.
Dave, I want to go even dive into this a little bit and give people the understanding of kind of your life cycle. And it wasn't that you had never been exposed to this type of stuff, the judgment, the self-development, all this. You worked head of security for Tony Robbins. You're listening to one of the greatest self-development coaches and mentors out there speak on a regular basis, even before this moment. You were a very successful high-level position at a major company. Traveling over 100 times a year. And ultimately, it took an older lady in a church to grab you and say a couple words that made all of these life lessons start to click. And we often talk about it, you can be taken to water all the time, but you can't be made to drink. You can hear these lessons over and over again. You can be in the rooms, you can go to the conferences, you can read the books, you can be exposed to the information, but it takes you truly owning it. It takes you truly taking ownership of that moment and of those lessons to create that change for you. And I would love to just get your take on that and how that journey for you and what it's meant for you.
Thank you for opening up that for me, because that's actually what my book's about, my new book, in addition, of course, some other things. So here's the short version. So as I mentioned, I had a mentor, Bill, who came into my life in 1984. For 14 years, he mentored me and told me these stories and really taught me these life strategic lessons, right? But in 1997, after my mother had passed away, he called me to his office here in Charlotte, North Carolina. And he said two things. First thing, it was a beautiful office. I'd never been to his office. He said, first thing, I want you to know I've got lung cancer. Now, he smoked two packs a day since the 30s, right? I mean, so and he could understand why. But the second thing, he walked over to his desk, which is a beautiful big roller desk. It was one of these big old beautiful desks. Pulled out these crumpled pieces of paper, sat down next to me and gave these to me. He said, I want to give this to you. I said, what is it? He goes, this is what I've been teaching you. These are the lessons that I wrote down in 1929 for my mentor. I'm going to pass on to you, but you got to promise me one thing. You know, don't let it die with you. Don't let it die with you. And he passed away in September of that year. Well, what do I do with these notes? I put them in a journal. I don't look at them until 2015. And I started writing my book, Moments Matter. I found these notes. And I'm like, what an idiot I am. I've had gold in my hands, and I haven't done anything with it. So I called my current mentor, Donna. I said, Don, let me share this with you. I shared this with him. And he said something that was so profound. And Justin, this is the answer to your question. He says, God doesn't give you the lesson until you're ready. You weren't ready. And I think that's what happens in life. I think we learn all these things. I was with Tony for 14 years. He taught me everything. I was with him side by side, traveled with him, right? I got insights that people would pay millions of dollars for. And I knew it. But maybe it takes that one trigger. Something happened to trigger it. To all of a sudden open up, because I think really that's what happens. God gives you that lesson when you're ready to do it. And all these years, I wasn't ready. And that was the moment. When that lady came up, that was the moment. She woke me up, right? Okay, this is it. What are you going to do with it now, right? And that, I think that's what happens to people. So I think you start owning it because you already have it. You own it, but you don't employ it and take action until God gives you that reason to do it. And that's what happened to me.
Amazing.
It really is. And your story itself and just your journey, right? Like you said, I mean, as Justin was saying, you would think that somebody who has that much access to Tony Robbins would be living in the ownership state that you are now, but it did. It took something completely separate from that, a moment in time, an event for you that was completely separate that is now your physical gold.
Right.
To live in the life, and like you said, serve others the way that you are and to the level that you are now.
Well, thank you, Elise, because one of the things I talk about is that day on the Hudson River in 2009, pretty much everything that I learned from Tony and came into play, whether it's resourcefulness, right, or having faith or certainty, all these things he talks about came into play that day, right? So I had it, right? I knew it. But I think you need something to jar you, right? It's like, okay, yeah, you got it. Yeah, and one of the things, I don't know if you believe in the Bible or not, but you know, it's all about taking action. So he talks about it. You have to take action. You know, Jesus said, follow me, right? Take action. Don't just sit around. You got to do something with it. So Justin, at least I think that's what happened. When that lady came up, that was a trigger. And when I found my notes and I gave them, shared them with Don, and Don's like, you weren't ready. Now you're ready. Do something with it. And that's what happened.
Dave, it's so clear that you, as of, you know, this event and even prior to that, but really since this plane crash that you were in, you have lived in a true ownership lifestyle? Now, this is one of our listeners' favorite questions. Okay. So we really want to hear from you. What in you know, a word or a phrase or you know, a quick snippet, what is your definition of ownership?
I think it goes back to something my dad told me when I was a child, and I lived by, as your word is your bond. You own your word. And so when I say something, I'm going to do something. My family does know this now. When I say it, it's going to happen. It may not happen right now. It may happen, you know, a year from now, right? But I think owning is when you make that promise to yourself, that word to yourself. And the second part of that, at least, is this: you profess it. Because back in April, when I said I'm going to swim with the Navy SEALs, and people were looking at me like, "You can't swim with the Navy SEALs? What, are you crazy?" Right? These guys are the elite. And you're going back to the Hudson River and the waves and the current. I said, I'm going to do it, right? My word was my bond. There's no way I wasn't going to do it. It goes from commitment to resolve. And that's it. When you own it, it's resolved. It's done. Now you just have to have a strategy and figure it out.
I've got one last question for you, Dave. And so often people that go through trauma, they go through something really hard. It can take them one of two ways. Right. They can take a far left turn and go into a real negative space, or they can take a far hard right turn and go the way that you have, to serve people, to take care of people rather than being served, to go and make an impact in a really positive way. What is it that you've been able to do and able to harness this and be able to take that right turn?
Good question. And I'll end up and share another quick story, because it happened about 5 years ago, probably 6 years ago, 2015, about 6 years ago. I got a phone call where I'm sitting right now from a gentleman who's the editor of AARP magazine. And he asked me if he could interview me. I said, why you want to interview me? AARP's for old people, right? I'm not old, number one. How am I going to teach old people, right? They already know everything. He said, well, we want you to talk about PTGS. I said, what is PTGS? He goes, post-traumatic growth syndrome. He said, there's two universities that have done studies on you. UNC Charlotte, North Dakota State University. But how did you grow from a traumatic life experience while so many other people went a different direction? What's the difference that you did? So I did this interview with AARP Magazine, which led to me doing my TED Talk about PTGS. And I shared some of the strategies. Of course, you know, doing a TED Talk yourself, Justin, right? You got 18 minutes, you better get in quick. So I shared two of those strategies, but I think really it came down to really five different things that I talk about. But the one thing I'll leave is this, is the meaning you attach to something produces the emotion of your life. And emotion is your life. So the meanings I started attaching to things were different, such as, I'll give you the example of the gentleman in Good Morning America. He attached a plane crash to devastation in his life. He lost everything in his mind. Where I attached this, it was a blessing to me. And all of a sudden I started telling people, I was like, you know, if I can help people reframe meanings, that started changing. So I'll leave you with one example, because you're sitting in Canada right now. I was on my way back from speaking in Florida. I was in Savannah, Georgia. I got a phone call from a friend that said, you need to talk to this lady. She's up in a cabin in northern Canada. She won't come out. She just survived the avalanche in Nepal, one of four people. You got to talk to her. So what can I offer? She said, you survived the plane. I said, I know I did, but what can I offer? Please talk to her. So I talked to this lady, and she was rigid. She had survivor's guilt. She wouldn't come out of this cabin. Why did they die and I didn't? I had that question from a TV station in Montreal. I heard that one before. So I said, okay. I said, give me a few days. Let me call you next week. So what I did over that next week, I worked on talking to somebody who got me connected to somebody in Ethiopia. And I got on the phone with this gentleman, and every day he's got to go get water. He scraped for clothes and food. So I said, would you be open to having a phone call with me? He would. So I connected this lady in some cabin in northern Canada with this gentleman in Ethiopia. We had a three-way call. I let him tell her what's like every day in Ethiopia. And all of a sudden she's like, wow, I have something to live for. I've got food. I've got shelter. And all of a sudden it shifted her mindset. She reframed it like, I have a reason to live now, instead of wallowing on why I didn't die. And that, the meaning I was helping. So that's what I help people now, is how to reframe meanings. to what you're doing, helping people grow from traumatic life experiences.
It's amazing. And it's no wonder that you've been able to take this. And at least I always believe nothing ever happens by coincidence. Everything happens for a reason. You've seen, done, and been in places that you were supposed to. And really everything you had been through, experienced, working with Tony, working at, I won't mention the name of the company.
Thank you.
But working at the company that you did, the life that you had lived so far had set you up for that moment.
Yep.
And then that moment set you up for everything else. And it's so great to see where you've come and see the impact that you're making. Where can our listeners access more of you, access more of your message, find your books? I know you've got a couple out there already. And obviously coming up with the new one, Turmoil to Triumph. Where can people access these and get more access to you?
Well, thank you so much, Elise and Justin, for giving me that opportunity and having me today. First of all, I always encourage people to just check me out on LinkedIn at David Sanderson, because every week I write a new blog and I share some additional content of some of these things, such as what I'm doing now with the Navy SEAL swim, some of these distinctions that I learned, because they are life lessons. So number one, check me out on LinkedIn. I would really encourage that. But second, my website is davesandersonspeaks.com. And of course, like everybody's website, it's always under construction, but we'll be really putting some of the new content out there, not only about the SEAL swim, but about turning turmoil to triumph. And that's where my mission is now leading me, because I'll leave you with this. My mission, as you talked about, what's changed, at least I think you asked that question. You know, my mission is now, how can I teach what Bill has taught me, what Tony's taught me, but put this together to a million people in 10 years? That's my mission. So I've began putting that together, how I'm going to do it. We talked about making the big, big, bold statement and owning it. I own it. Now I've got to figure out how to do it. So check me out on my website, and I'm sharing some ideas on how I'm doing that with people right now, helping them understand some of these mindset success that I was very blessed to be received.
It's amazing. And for everybody listening, it's, you don't have to go through something as traumatic, as national newsworthy as a plane crash. It could be something much smaller. It can be something that is truly traumatic to you, something that truly changes the way in which you look at things. And ultimately, every single thing that happens to us, we attach a meaning to it. And that meaning is going to give us an emotion. And we have control over that. We have control of how we approach things. We have control of what our mindset is and how we do it. But going back to this notion that Dave's mother told him, is if you do the right thing, God will take care of you. And being so true to what your values are, having those distinctions so deep, it will make your work your bond and allow you to show up in a place of service. And service is what allows you to impact, which allows you to be truly fulfilled and truly take and find the success that you want. Because as we always say, success is different, so be different and own it.
Thank you very much. I could have said it even better than you just said it, Justin. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. And everybody, we'll see you guys next week.